Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Just a week ago, we were roasting turkeys, assembling stuffing, and baking pies for the Thanksgiving feast. And the very next day, our attention, food or otherwise, turned to the December holidays. The first day of Hanukkah this year is December 14th, Christmas is the 25th, and Kwanzaa runs from December 26th through the first of the year. And of course, there are food traditions associated with ringing in the new year. Today, we talk about the role of food in our celebrations, the traditional dishes that make the holiday, and the new recipes or foods we incorporate. We also talk about holiday food triumphs and disasters, and our approach to healthful foods during the holiday. Do we try to present healthful options, or do we succumb to decadence and get back on track come January? We welcome back to the show Jenny Ron. She's a registered dietitian with a master's in nutrition and public health and author of Coastal Kitchen. Hi, Jenny.
Good morning, Mindy.
And then we have PJ Hamill, a baker who's developed and written recipes, blogs, and cookbooks for the King Arthur Baking Company for over three decades. Welcome back, PJ.
Hi, Mindy.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, favorite holiday foods, holiday food triumphs and fails, and whether you abandon healthy eating habits this time of year or you try to stick with a healthful approach. You can join the conversation at 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's start with Thanksgiving, since it was last week. First of all, how was your holiday? How was it, PJ, for you?
It was fine. We had family come down from the South Shore, like we usually do, and I don't love roasting a turkey, so I did not roast a turkey. I roasted a turkey breast, and we had chicken thighs, which everyone loves. And since I'm a baker, I have to say I made pumpkin bars, fresh blueberry pie, and four dozen potato rolls.
Wow.
That's the one thing I have to make for every family gathering, or else I'm not allowed to come.
So. How about for you, Jenny?
Oh, that sounds wonderful. PJ, I needed your baking skills over at my house this year. it was just six of us. So our family of four, and then my in-laws were here, and we had I said this year we're making things a little bit smaller. We still did a turkey, but it was a small turkey, a 10 pounder. So it wasn't too overwhelming. I'm not a huge fan of turkey either. And I tried to convince my husband and his parents and my kids to do baked stuffed lobsters. Actually, I try to convince them every other year when we have Thanksgiving with them, because we alternate with my family. And I was turned down again this year. I'm like, oh, all right, we'll do. I love the turkey smell. I just don't, I don't other things about it. So we did the traditional turkey. And then we did just a ton of like roasted vegetables. Cause I'm also not a big fan, although I grew up with, the mashed potatoes and cream turnip and, the sweet potatoes and the mashed sweet potatoes and all those wonderful things. But I tend to prefer roasted veggies, and my husband does too. So we roasted the potatoes, roasted Brussels sprouts, and did a nice big salad, and still we had a gluten-free stuffing for my mother-in-law who has celiac. And yeah, it was great. And we didn't go too crazy with the food. We had two pies, a gluten-free pumpkin pie and a gluten-free apple crumble. And it was wonderful. It wasn't too much stress.
Sounds good. Yeah. Me too. I'm not crazy about turkey either. I'd be happy with a roast chicken, actually. But, tradition, we did the turkey. And we usually go to my in-laws. And my mother-in-law is at a point now where it's just too much to do everything. So for the last few years, she does a turkey, and then we all sort of do the different sides, spring thing. And this year, I'm going to share a little tip on what my side was that you can use for any holiday, you can use any time. I did a maple ginger glazed carrots, and my husband kept saying, "Are you sure you didn't put any sugar in here?" I'm like, "No, I did not." You literally just slice up the carrots, and you add to you're going to steam them in about a couple inches of water, and you add maple syrup and ginger, and you just steam them for 5 or 10 minutes, however long, depending how thick you cut your carrots, and that's it. And then you drain them, and there you go. And a little tip on this, fresh ginger gets a little bit stringy. The powdered ginger gets clumpy, but the pasted ginger works just great. And it's fabulous.
Those sound incredible.
Yeah, it's really, really delicious.
Do they get a little caramelized or
not really. No, but because you put the ginger and the maple syrup in the water when you're steaming them, mm-hmm. it kind of gets the flavor throughout the carrot. And they're just, the carrots are sweet anyway. And Jenny, I love your idea of roasting. I don't think people realize roasting the vegetables really brings out the sweetness in them, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We do roasted vegetables almost every night, especially during the cold winter months. That's my favorite way to eat veggies. Interestingly enough, though, my kids are 8 and 10, and they will not touch cooked vegetables, even roasted. Like, you guys, this is like they're caramelized. They're delicious. They taste like candy. I think I would actually prefer. I know I'm a little bit out there, but I would prefer roasted veggies to most candies. But they're all about raw vegetables for whatever reason. So
I have a 10-year-old. The same thing. He will not eat those cooked carrots, but he'll eat the raw carrots.
Isn't that crazy? I wonder what it is about. I mean, I know the kids love the crunch and the dips that go along with the raw veggies, but they're missing out on these roasted veggies. Just fabulous.
At some point, they're going to change their mind. So I know a lot of folks, like we all three, say, turkey. I know, Jenny, you tried to convince your family to bake stuffed lobster. We don't have to do turkey on the holidays. I mean, and literally, we only do it on Thanksgiving. We do not do it on Christmas or the holidays. Do you have that same fight when you come to December holiday cooking, Jenny? Or do you do turkey again, or is it just that one time?
No, same for us. It's just the one time of year. Thank goodness. Nothing against turkeys, but there's so many other things to do. So we usually do Christmas Eve. Typically we'll do some type of fish. Oftentimes it's a big, beautiful salmon fillet. And I have my 8-year-old daughter she loves salmon. She could eat a half a pound of salmon herself. So we'll usually do something like that, maybe with some fresh herbs on top and bake it in the oven and sprinkle it with like pomegranate seeds, mm-hmm. just for that little bit of sparkle. And then usually on Christmas Day, we do lasagna, and my son loves lasagna. So we'll do, a couple different types of lasagna and a nice big salad. Yeah. So yeah, we're not about the turkey on Christmas.
What about you, PJ? Is turkey just Thanksgiving?
Yes, I'd say that's the only holiday I host. So I've been for 50 years an honorary Irish-Norwegian member of my husband's very large Italian family. And every holiday we would generally spend with the family. And at Thanksgiving, it would be turkey and spaghetti. And then at Christmas, it's ham and spaghetti. So there's always pasta involved in an Italian holiday. So I have to make, for Christmas, I've taken over my mother-in-law who's passed away. I've taken over a lot of her traditions. And I have to make zeppelas.
Oh, what are they?
They're basically deep fried. They look like crullers, small crullers, but they have anchovies tucked inside. Oh. And a lot of people go, ew. No, they really do taste good. The deep frying, the saltiness of the anchovies. And then for those that just say, I'm not eating anchovies, I just take some of the dough and make what they call St. Joseph donuts, which are just little round balls of dough that you deep fry and then coat with honey.
Mm. And it's interesting how many people say something like, it wouldn't be Thanksgiving without, right? And you kind of fill in the blank. It might be the special stuffing that their grandmother made or the Jell-O salad. Do you have any of these? And PJ, you mentioned you have to make these potato. What are the potato?
Potato rolls. Amish.
What are
they're
they?
Called Amish dinner rolls. They're just a plain white dinner roll, but they're made with potato so that they stay moist and fresh. You can make them 2 or 3 days ahead, and they're still good. Mm-hmm. And they're very kind of heavy and dense, as opposed to a Wonder Bread type of squishy roll.
Sound delicious. Yeah. Jenny, is there something that you have to do? Wouldn't be Thanksgiving without not the turkey?
I mean, I would say, I would say the stuffing for sure, but also the cranberries, and cranberries two ways. We always do the old fashioned, the canned cranberry sauce that you can slice up. Mm-hmm. My parents always did that, so we continue to do that. And then we do a cranberry relish, like a fresh cranberry relish with just cranberries, orange, the flesh of an orange, and then orange zest, a little bit of brown sugar and cinnamon, sometimes a splash of orange juice. And to me, that's one of the best things about about Thanksgiving is that fresh, you know, you have so many things that are kind of warm and mushy and they taste great, but then to have that fresh, you know, a little bit crisp cranberry sauce along with it, or fresh cranberry relish, I think is just such a nice contrast.
Yeah. I would say for me, it's my mother-in-law's creamed onions. Oh, they're so good. So good. All right. A listener in Falmouth says, we use a Bon Appetit recipe from the 1970s for cornbread stuffing. It has loads of butter and heavy cream, but is a standout and only for Thanksgiving. Thanks for sharing that. Hanukkah also has traditional foods as part of the celebration. I don't know if anybody here celebrates Hanukkah, but what are some of the foods you associate with the 8-day festival of lights, Jenny?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I'm not an expert in Hanukkah foods by any means. So I would, I don't know.
What about you, PJ? You have any ideas?
Sufganiyat are little donuts. Mm-hmm. And probably that's the only baked good I could think of involving Hanukkah.
Well, maybe we have some listeners who celebrate Hanukkah who want to share what some of the traditional foods are. We'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626 or shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Okay, holiday parties are in full swing. Going to my first one this afternoon. Got my little Christmas attire here on. I'd love to hear some of your favorite savory foods to make or bring to a holiday party. What about you, Jenny?
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to mind, of course, is because I'm always thinking seafood. We love to do like a seafood platter, or we call it a seacuterie board. And for Christmas time, we do a beautiful one with we used to frequent the Clam Man all the time, and they have such great seafood in Falmouth. So we would go and get some of their shrimp and then do some seared scallops with a like a cranberry cocktail sauce on the side for both the shrimp and the scallops, and then some oysters. You know, got to have oysters, especially now. They're so good before they kind of hibernate for the winter. But right now, in the late fall, they're kind of fattening up and really, really delicious. So we would do a charcuterie board with shrimp, with the scallops, with the oysters, and then do like a cranberry mignonette, cranberry cocktail sauce, and then have some cheese and crackers and nuts and that sort of thing kind of scattered all through. So love that. Or, you know, if you're not doing seafood, I love a, you know, a good, beautiful cheese board too.
Cranberry mignonette, that sounds delicious.
Really, really good.
I've never
yes.
had that. Wow.
Yeah, I'll send you the recipe, actually. It's in the recipe is in the book, but I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Really good and very simple.
Yeah. What about you, PJ? What do you think?
Well, speaking of the Clam Man, which is a great local resource, I like to do profiteroles, which are a choux paste, like a cream puff kind of pastry, and you stuff them with smoked bluefish mixed with cream cheese. That always goes over very well. You obviously do them very small. And the other thing I have to do is our cheese sticks made with easy flaky pastry. People probably have heard of the pastry that you roll out and you turn and you fold and you refrigerate and you turn and you fold. And it's if you watch the Great British Baking Show, they're always doing things like that. But this is a very easy pastry that you just mix up with butter, flour, and some sour cream, and it rolls out into this beautiful, flaky, layered, buttery kind of crispy pastry that you can top with cheese and roll in sticks and do all kinds of things.
Oh, that sounds yummy too.
It is.
Making me hungry. All right, so, and of course, cookies, you know, when you're thinking desserts, when you're bringing something, a lot of people think of cookies. And PJ, before we went on the air, we were talking about, you saw this survey of people saying, are chocolate chip cookies considered Christmas cookies, right? And there's a big debate over that.
Right. People are saying, absolutely not. You know, cut out cookies, or you have to follow the Christmas traditions. And the other people are saying, you know, if you serve chocolate chip cookies at the holidays, they're holiday cookies. Hello. And I, you know, my opinion is that eat whatever you want, right, as far as cookies go at the holidays. You do not have to cut and roll out cookies and do things like that that take a lot of time and you don't particularly enjoy.
Okay, so what if you took the cookie cutter and make a Christmas tree chocolate chip cookie, right?
you can actually do, I have done things like that. You make a big, like a big chocolate chip cookie, and then when it comes out of the oven warm, you cut it up with the cookie cutter.
There you
and
go.
Then they cool in that shape.
Yeah.
And then you have lots of scraps left over to eat.
All right, Jenny, what's your thought on that? Chocolate chip cookies, are they Christmas cookies?
So while I would, chocolate chip cookies are by far my favorite cookie, but I would say no, unless you do what PJ just described. But we never, I don't know what Santa likes best, but I think he, for some reason, I feel like he likes sugar cookies best. So we always do, we do the cutout sugar cookies. Yeah. And it's so fun, you know, it's such a great process with the kids. And, you know, I have such great memories of them when they were little, kind of stuffing their faces with all the sprinkles and the icing and stuff. And then being like, oh God. You know, being, you know, having such a tummy ache afterwards, but it's such a great memory decorating cookies together. And with chocolate chip cookies, you can't really, you know, you're not really decorating them as
although, PJ, before we went on the air, PJ, you had a great idea for when you're working with the kids, because doesn't it happen? You're rolling them out, you're doing all the work, right? They decorate a few, and then it's like, you're doing the rest, right? So, PJ, you suggested having them already cut, ready to go, so the kids just decorate. And I guess it depends on their age, but for younger kids, that they really are only interested in the decorating.
Yeah, you've got to look at their ages for sure. You know, the younger the kids, the probably less their attention span is going to be as far as mixing the flour and the molasses and all of that stuff. And I think younger kids do better if you just give them cookies to decorate. But as they get older, you can bring them into the process ahead of time. Maybe you've already made the dough and they help you roll it out. Or maybe you've rolled it out and they help you cut. So, yeah you can bring them in.
And, of course, gingerbread cookies, right? Kids love to decorate the gingerbread men and women.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, it's funny. Lexi, my 8-year-old, just said to me the other day, she's like, Mom, I never told you, but when we used to make the gingerbread cookies, I would always lock all the windows and doors after we made them so that they couldn't escape from the house. You know, like, I was like, oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I never thought of that. But yes, she was scared that the cookies were going to run out the door.
Oh, that's so funny. We're talking holiday food this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. You have a traditional food you'd like to share with us, or maybe you have something that worked out really well, or a disaster. We'd love to hear that too. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about the role of food in our celebrations, the traditional dishes that we make on the holidays, and the new recipes or foods we incorporate. We're also talking about holiday food triumphs and disasters, and our approach to healthful foods. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Jenny Ron, a registered dietitian with a master's in nutrition and public health. She's the author of Coastal Kitchen, and PJ Hamill, a baker who's developed and written recipes, blogs, and cookbooks for the King Arthur Baking Company. And we're going to talk to Julie, who's giving us a call from Nantucket. Hi, Julie.
Hello. How are you?
Great.
So at Christmas for years, I have been doing a food gift bag, I call it. I make German Christmas honey cakes, Lebkuchen. And some fudge, a couple different kinds of homemade fudge. And the highlight to me and other people is it's a old-fashioned boiled raisin cake that a recipe my grandmother gave me, and it's from the early 1900s.
Ooh.
And you boil all the ingredients and then you throw in the flour and you bake it, and these little cakes are amazing.
Wow.
And they keep for like a couple of weeks unrefrigerated, and you can freeze them. And anyway, I put those together for Christmas, and people love to get the little bag. And if I had a stellar year of beech plums, they might get a jar of beech plum jelly as well.
Wow. I want to come to your house, Julie. That I can see where everybody's excited. Now now that you started that tradition, you know you can't stop, right?
Oh, yeah. But before that, I used to make these fruit-filled shortbread cookies. And those are a lot of work, and I love doing it. But one year I couldn't do it, and I handed the bag off to one of my daughters, and she went diving in, and she goes, "Where are they?" And I said, oh, don't get mad. I just had no time. And so I said, I'll make them for you on your birthday. So every year, come March, I make them just for her.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, thanks for sharing that, Julie. I appreciate that story. And, you know, Julie just brought up a good point. She said it was her grandmother's recipe, the raisin bread. I am kicking myself. My grandmother used to make panucci at the holidays, which is a type of fudge, right? And I used to call up and go, how do you make? And of course, she's no longer with us. And nobody saved that recipe. So if your grandmother has a recipe that you like, get that recipe now, right? Because you'll be kicking yourself later. Yeah. Do you have any, Jenny, any family recipes handed down that you use at the holidays?
You know, it's interesting you say that about the panucci fudge, because my grandmother, she made dozens and dozens of cookies, all different kinds. And I was just thinking, I don't think we have any of, I don't know if they were her original recipes or what, but really nobody has carried out that tradition. Her kids haven't carried out that tradition, but I need to ask them, ask my father and my aunts and uncles, if we do have some of those great recipes that Nani, she lived a wonderful life to 104, but wow, She's not with us anymore. Mm-hmm. But my mother-in-law, actually makes she's British, and she makes a Christmas cake every year, which I should get the recipe for, but it's a ton of different dried fruit. And she puts in, I want to say brandy in it. And she pours a little bit of brandy on, I think every evening or something, for a couple of weeks. And then she does like a marzipan icing over top of it. And it's very different. It's nothing that I grew up on, but my husband, you know, grew up on it his whole life. And I should get the recipe because we should probably carry along that tradition.
How about for you, PJ?
Well, Jenny, I just finished my Christmas fruit cakes, actually. I make them at the beginning of November, and then, as you said, pour liqueur or brandy over them weekly until the time comes. And I'd be very happy to share my recipe with you if you'd like it.
But, I would love that.
As for our family traditions, I don't really have any from my own family, but my Italian family. I think I'm the last person that has my grandmother-in-law's and mother-in-law's recipe for the zeppolas, as I said, and the St. Joseph donuts, but also some other dishes, the meatballs and various dishes that we have to have at the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, as we were kind of talking about, Thanksgiving seems to have sort of this universal menu. We're all cooking turkey, whether we like turkey or not. But for Christmas, it's, you know, there's a lot more cultural and ethnic influences that kind of, help us determine what we're going to be doing then. And a lot of people prepare seafood for the holiday. Are either of you planning seafood for your main dish on Christmas? Jenny, are you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. On Christmas Eve, for sure. I would love to do some oyster, maybe some roasted oysters up as an appetizer, and then a nice big fillet, hopefully of salmon. But one thing, I'm actually recipe testing a recipe today for the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. I'm doing some recipes for them. And I'm doing a black sea bass, actually, three whole black sea bass. I'm roasting them and stuffing them with fennel and lemons and some onion and shallot with some thyme. And I'm hoping that turns out really nicely, because I think a whole fish is, you know, so beautiful to serve on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And then for Christmas, Christmas morning, we'll do some nice cinnamon rolls, and then probably eggs, and then we'll do lasagna for Christmas dinner.
Yeah, that's right. You did say lasagna. What about you, PJ?
We actually do have to have one fish dish. We used to be, you know, the seven fishes was big, but now we're down to just one, and it's called fishy spaghetti. And it is a very simple spaghetti with homemade marinara and mashed up anchovies in it.
Oh, wow. Okay. And for those who are thinking about trying a seafood dish for the holiday, any recommendations? I'm just thinking, Jenny, you're testing it ahead of time. You don't want to do it for the first time on the actual holiday, right? But what are some thoughts that people should keep in mind if they want to do a seafood dish for the holidays?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes, it's definitely a good idea. And if you haven't made this dish before, always test it before for sure. But I think a nice, any type of baked fish would be great. A nice either salmon, or you could do a white fish too, baked with some tomatoes and olives and maybe some capers and lots of olive oil, some garlic would be really nice as well. And then all the shellfish, clams and great clams and mussels as an appetizer or even as a main dish. And then the oysters, I think roasted oysters are just so fun for holidays too. We even sometimes, if the weather is decent, we'll go out at the on the fire pit and roast them outside over the fire too, which my
Yeah, I
son
was
loves.
just going to ask you, what do you do when you roast your oysters? How do you do it?
Yeah, usually we shuck them and then we'll do like a really simple herb and garlic butter. So we'll just mash up some garlic and any types of herb, any herbs that you have on hand, parsley, maybe some thyme, and then make that, almost compound butter. And then I have a fabulous oyster tray. It's a cast iron oyster tray that fits 12 oysters. So I'll pop the oysters in the tray and then a little bit of the compound butter on top and sometimes some panko crumbs sprinkled over it. And then you're just cooking them until the panko crumbs are nice and golden and they're so
That
good. If
sounds
you don't
good.
have a tray too, you can just we'll just cr crinkle, crimple, crumple up some tin foil, and then kind of nestle the oysters in the tin foil so they stay put and so you don't lose any of that oyster liqueur.
Yeah, well, that sounds delicious. All right, let's talk to Catherine calling from Kitutt. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. 53 years ago, on our first Christmas that we were married, I thought I would make my grandmother's famous pudding. And I stayed up all night with very expensive things to put it together that we couldn't afford and brought it to my in-laws for Christmas. And I made the mistake of saying it was suet pudding. And it disappeared. It was never served. And I was very young and didn't have the nerve to say, "Where's my pudding?" So we ate my new sister-in-law's cake, and I have no idea what happened to my suet pudding.
Oh my,
that's so
So you have to
sad.
be careful
Oh,
what you call things, I guess, when you bring them to a new family.
and had you, I mean, the pudding came out fine. There was nothing wrong with it. It was
Oh,
just good.
it was beautiful. My
Ah.
grandmother had made it every year when I was a kid, and at this age now, I would have gone and gotten it out of the fridge. And I would have served it and I would have made a big fuss about it. But I was 22 years old, brand new family,
Yeah.
and I walked in and handed it to my new mother-in-law. And I said, "This is my grandmother's suet pudding." And she went, "Uh-huh." And I don't know what happened to it.
Oh, that was
Oh,
not a
so
very nice welcome to the family, was
oh,
it?
no.
Yeah.
I should have known better. I should have called it something else, I guess. But
Oh, Catherine, thanks for sharing. Appreciate that. We'd love to hear your holiday food stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Beef is also featured in many holiday menus. Any thoughts on easier recipes for festive beef and given the high cost of beef and meat in general, ideas on how to make that beef go a bit further?
Oftentimes people will think of beef Wellington as being a very fancy dish, but it doesn't have to be. You can, buy some Pepperidge Farm puff pastry and you get a whatever the cut is, I'm not sure. And not deep fried, just fry some very finely chopped mushrooms, spread them on top of the beef, and then wrap the puff pastry around it and bake it. And it's really quite simple and seems pretty deluxe when you serve it.
And actually, I'd add a little English mustard to that.
Sounds good.
What are your thoughts, Jenny?
Yeah, I mean, we do sometimes on Christmas Eve we will do a filet mignon, and obviously that's on the pricier side. But whenever we're trying to kind of stretch things further, I always we're a big vegetable family, and so the smaller portions of meat and the other proteins, and then larger portions of vegetables, so you can still get that great flavor and the great food that you like, the steak, but. you know, you're kind of going heavier in the other areas.
Yeah.
And this sounds kind of peculiar, but smash burgers, if you just want a little flavor of beef. Now, I make a nice homemade hamburger bun, and you take maybe 1 to 2 ounces of ground beef and just smash it so flat and cook it very quickly and put it in a really nice homemade bun with a lot of condiments and lettuce and tomato, whatever vegetables you like. And it gives you that beef flavor without really having to buy or eat a lot of beef.
Oh, that's a good idea. All right, another listener found us says, my husband makes a steamed mashed turnip dish that is a family tradition, but I don't find it very tasty. I still encourage him to make it for the holidays because of the tradition. Is there any way to make it more appetizing?
Add more butter.
Just maybe some salt too, right? Yeah. Salt and butter.
Yeah, right.
I think turnip is a taste. Either you like them or you don't. You know, and half of my family likes them, and I just do the same thing. Mash them and steam them and mash them and add salt and butter. And they seem to be very happy with that, so just let them be happy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, especially with people are trying to eat a little more healthier, we're trying to cut back on the butter and the salt and the sugar. But, you know.
Not at the holidays.
At the holidays, right. So throw more butter and salt in those turnips.
Well, I always liked what Julia Child said about eating in general. She said, eat everything, just not a lot of everything.
Mm. Moderation.
Yeah.
Moderation
yeah.
is
she
the
said,
key.
She said, don't avoid these wonderful holiday foods. Just don't eat 3 servings of them, you know.
We're talking about holiday food. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about the role of food in our celebrations, the traditional dishes that make the holiday, and new recipes or foods we incorporate, also holiday food triumphs and disasters. With us is Jenny Ron, registered dietitian with a master's in nutrition and public health. She's the author of Coastal Kitchen, and PJ Hamill, a baker who's developed and written recipes, blogs, and cookbooks for the King Arthur Baking Company for over 3 decades. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Jennifer is calling from Centerville. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
So you're talking about traditional recipes getting lost. And so I just wanted, my mother gave me several years ago a bunch of recipes that were my maternal grandmother's and my paternal grandmother's. And then recently I got her more treasured recipes. And I just yesterday picked up, I had put them all into a recipe book for my nieces and nephews and my brothers to get them for Christmas. So we're handing down some of the traditional recipes. So you're making me feel
I
good about
love
doing that.
What a great idea. I bet that's going to be the gift that everybody's talking about for years to come. What a good idea. Yeah.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. Jennifer, thanks for that suggestion. Okay, we all know what we have to do now, don't we? All right, Jennifer, thank you. PJ, what about, you know, we have a lot of folks who are gluten-free nowadays. I think Jenny mentioned she's a gluten-free family member. Baking now, there's a really a lot more choices than there used to be, right?
Yes, gluten-free baking has evolved a lot. You no longer have to panic if someone says they're eating gluten-free and, you know, it's the holidays and what are you going to serve them? The first thing you can do is just pick up a gluten-free flour. And by that, I mean not a rice flour or something that like that, but something that's actually made for gluten-free baking. It's got all the ingredients already in it. And you just substitute that for the regular flour in any recipe, your favorite Christmas cookies, your gingerbread, your whatever you're making. You just substitute this gluten-free flour for the regular flour, and Bob's your uncle, you're all set to go. The other thing you can do is, as Mindy, you mentioned, you have a chocolate
raspberry cake that I make with almond flour. We use that very fine granulated sugar. It's got a lot of heavy cream. I mean, it's a lot of sugar, right? And chocolate, dark chocolate, and the almond flour. It is, and everybody asks for it, and not just at Christmas time, at a birthday. Can you make me that? Chocolate raspberry cake. Yeah,
same
it's delicious.
Thing. I bake often for the Sandwich Arts Alliance, and I do the gluten-free baking for a lot of their celebrations. And people love the gluten-free. They don't even know it's gluten-free.
Yeah.
It's so much better than it was 10 years ago. So if you tried it 10 years ago, give it another try.
Yeah. Jenny, do you, was it your mother-in-law that's gluten-free? Yeah. Do you do special dessert types of things for her?
Yeah, you know, we do. We do a combination of some homemade baked goods, but also the mix, you know, the gluten-free mixes now if I need to do something really quick, or if my 8-year-old wants to make something for my mother-in-law and use, you know, she'll use a mix, and they're great. Yeah. And the almond flour, interestingly, for Thanksgiving, we made that apple crumble, and I was using a recipe. I can't remember what recipe it was, but it called for, you know, regular flour, and I subbed in the almond flour, and I wasn't sure if it was going to be too rich and, you know, a little bit too fatty for the dish, but it turned out so good with just substituting the almond for the regular flour. And I know you can't always do that, but in the apple crumble, you know, I feel like it's pretty foolproof, but so it turned out fabulous.
Yeah. All right. Carol is giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Okay. This may be sort of an off the wall question, but I am cooking pheasants that I got for a dinner party, and I've been reading multiple recipes, and what I've come up with that's easiest, because, you know, it's kind of complex, is to wrap the pheasant breast in thick bacon and add the chicken soup and put a casserole and shove it in the oven. But my question is, why can't you just do the whole bird like that?
Go ahead, PJ.
I actually do cook pheasants because my husband's a hunter.
Yeah, me too.
And I think the parts of the pheasant other than the breast and maybe the thighs are pretty tough.
Yeah.
And I think unless you're going to stew that bird for a long time, the end parts of the legs are not going to be that great.
Right. So I guess what I'm coming to, and I guess that what you're saying is, you know, trim off the legs, the wingtips and so forth, and just use the pheasant breast. And not what I'm going to do is wrap it in the thick bacon and then put it into a casserole with chicken soup and just cook it for 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think you could use the thighs, too, especially for the bigger, if they're bigger birds.
Okay, well, they're in the freezer now, but I'll sure try to do that. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for the call, Carol. Good luck. Thanks. Appreciate that. All right, side dishes are often people's favorites, right, for the December holidays. What do you like to have on the table? Jenny, you mentioned roasted vegetables. Are you going to do that again for Christmas Eve and Christmas?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I, in particular, I love roasted fennel. I'm on like a fennel kick right now.
Oh,
so roasted fennel. Oh, so good. With some roasted red onion. Love adding onion to the roasted veggies. And of course, we might do, you know, some Brussels sprouts, probably some Brussels sprouts in there, maybe some butternut squash, just all the harvest veggies. But fennel and roasted onions in particular, I think are really nice.
And beets.
Oh, yeah. Yes, beets too. Oh, my husband loves beets. And we've been getting them in some of our CSA share this fall. Beets are fabulous. We always do a big salad. Oftentimes, you know, maybe with some pistachios and pomegranates and blue cheese, and then a nice, maybe citrusy vinaigrette or something to go with that. I love a big salad alongside any large meal, especially when it's more of this comfort food type dining.
What about side dishes for you, PJ?
As I mentioned, Italian family, and it's always pasta, side dish and main dish. But a new tradition we've had the last several years is just mac and cheese. And that's a big Southern tradition.
Oh.
Down South, you have to have macaroni and cheese for every celebration. Mm. And so I've spent a lot of time going through many, many, many macaroni and cheese recipes to see which one I like best, and it's a work in progress.
That's a comfort food for sure, right?
Oh, yeah. It is, yeah.
And there's so many different, I mean, it's like you hear lobster mac and cheese, and you know,
yeah,
people add all
big
kinds
on the Cape.
Kinds of things. I wonder if there are simple modifications to side dishes that will make them more healthy but still delicious, like, you know, mashed potatoes that have sour cream and butter, or delicious but lots of hidden fat and calories. Any suggestions, Jenny, on how to make, if you want to make it a little healthier?
Yeah, I mean, you could always sub if you're using sour cream. You know, you could always go a little bit lighter with the obvious switch, which would be a low-fat sour cream. But I tend to, you know, for things like butter, you're not, you know, using a butter substitute. I'm not a big fan of margarine or anything like that. Using a little less butter, a little less cream. You know, most people are not gonna notice that. Similarly with the salt. But a great way to add flavor too without adding more fat and salt is using, you know, fresh herbs in your cooking, or, you know, even dried herbs if you have to. But fresh herbs that add so much great flavor and kind of jazz things up a little bit. So I think that's a great way to do it. But, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about the fat and calories. It's all about balance. You know, obviously you want to still be feeling good during the holidays. And when we're eating too much heavy food, we tend to not feel as good and want to sit on the couch more. So, you know, just making sure that you're trying to eat a little bit better at other meals during the holiday time, and loading up on those veggies and making sure to get some fresh air and get outside and, you know, get moving.
Right. I know one year, I think my husband, he makes the best mashed potatoes, and he did half potatoes and half, he uses a ricer, and he did cauliflower, mixed the
Ooh.
cauliflower and the potato together with the butter, and it was very good.
Yum.
Yeah.
Love that. We've done that too with parsnips.
Yeah.
Similarly, and you can, you know, it does give it a slightly different flavor, but still as, you know, as delicious, just a little bit different.
Yeah, PJ.
I think mashed potatoes in particular, it seems everyone loves them and serves them. One thing you can do that really helps is to start with the right potato. And I think a Yukon Gold or a yellow potato tend to have a somewhat buttery flavor to begin with, so you're halfway there. And when I make them, I use, we're pretty much not dairy-free, but milk-free. So I use oat milk and a little bit of cream cheese, and that really amps up the flavor.
Oh, interesting. All right. So, and there's lots of different vegetables we can just, one thing we always seem to do, those green bean casseroles. And I guess you can't do the green bean casserole without having those crunchy onions on top, right?
Yep. Yeah, fried onions. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I have made that green casserole the fancy way with the fresh green beans and the bechamel, and everyone's like, no, this isn't right. You know, so.
There's some things you just can't change, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about some dessert options. What are some of your favorite things to make or eat during the holiday season for dessert? You know, I go back to my, I usually make some kind of a cake, and not always that chocolate raspberry cake, but sometimes I have a great recipe for it's kind of like an angel food cake, but it has this like I use creme de menthe in the frosting, so it has the you know a little bit of Christmassy green, and it's you know the angel food cake's a little bit lighter. Sometimes after eating a big meal, you want something on the light side. Jenny, what are some of the things that you opt for?
Yeah, well, that sounds really delicious. What you just mentioned. So we typically do some sort of apple, you know, an apple pie or apple crumble, and then sometimes pumpkin. But one thing that we love to make during the holidays too are our chocolate truffles. My husband and I in Boston many years ago, actually probably 14, 15 years ago, we took a truffle making class in the South End, and we learned how to make these pretty simple truffles, you know, with the beautiful ganache that's just using, you know, chopped dark chocolate and then heavy cream on the stovetop, and then you pour it into a onto a sheet pan and let it chill for 24 hours, and then using kind of an ice cream scooper, you're scraping the chocolate and forming it into balls, and then dipping it in kind of like a candy shell chocolate, and then sprinkling it with some nice local sea salt. We love making those, and everybody loves. I mean, who doesn't love a chocolate truffle? So we tend to do those every year.
Yeah.
To gift, but also to, you know, to enjoy ourselves.
Right. What about you, PJ?
I find everybody loves fruit crisps and crumbles. They're really easy to make, and I made a bunch last summer when Crow Farm peaches were available. I made some peach crisps. I had strawberry and rhubarb from my own garden. I made strawberry rhubarb crisps, and of course, apple crisps with, again, the Crow Farm apples. And so I have staged them in my freezer, and they are ready to just pop into the oven and serve.
Mm, yummy. And you made those fruit cakes, you said, right?
Yeah. I've used Mary Berry's recipe. She's like the English Julia Child. Mm. And Jenny, I don't put the fondant icing on top, but you certainly can do that. Yeah. And it's a very traditional British fruit cake.
I would say the fondant icing looks so beautiful, but it doesn't taste very good.
Well, it's sweet. Yeah. It's just kind of literally sweet.
All right, so we had that listener in Falmouth who asked about the turnips, and Erin says, tempering the turnips but making them into a golden aromatic mash. So she says, two saucepans on the stove, simmer till tender, chopped carrots with chopped yellow onion and kosher salt, simmer cubed turnips with chopped peeled apple and a bit of kosher salt, drain and combine them. Mash the veg together with a few tablespoons of butter and a splash of heavy cream and or sour cream. Enjoy the holidays from a faithful listener and a CAI donor. Erin, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing that. There you go. There's all kinds of things we can do to spice up our sides, right?
Spice up our turnips, yeah.
Exactly. All right. So the holidays, not just about food, but being with loved ones, friends, and family. For those who are separated from loved ones, do you have thoughts on how we can connect and celebrate with a larger community this holiday season?
If you have a local community, not your family, but some kind of local community that you get together with, maybe you take a yoga class at the senior center or you volunteer at Audubon or anything you do, see if you can just make some treats and bring them to that group, and just people open up and they smile and laugh, and you just enjoy that little bit of time with them.
Yeah. Jenny, what are your thoughts?
Great idea. I think now with technology, it's so, so many of us are far away from our loved ones. And it's so great to be able to Zoom in or to FaceTime with them. So also, staying connected virtually too, I think is so important. And now you can almost, have somebody at the table that's not physically there, but they're there, they can see everybody, they can talk, they can have the conversation. Of course, they can't share in the food, but, still be a part of the celebration.
Yeah. And I really loved Jennifer's idea, who was making the family recipes for her nieces and nephews, and maybe throwing in some old photos in that little kind of cookbook, if you will, right, would be a lot of fun, which you can do from afar, right, if you're not getting together with those family members. Also, I have a neighbor, an elderly neighbor. She doesn't do this anymore because she doesn't move around as much. But when she was a few years ago, she would every year volunteer at the Pine Street kitchen in Boston for the home. And she would come back and she said she would meet the most interesting people and have the most interesting stories. And just, she really, not only feel like she's helping them, but they're helping her, right? She's got this connection with all the folks. And some of them she'd go back and some of the same people would be there the next year. But so there's lots that we can do, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we just have, I think, about a minute or so left. Are you going to try anything new, PJ, for this year, or are you sticking with the traditional stuff?
Oh, I'm sticking with the traditional because I would be crucified if I didn't do all the traditional stuff. But I just want to say one thing. Everybody, make a plan. Write down what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. It really helps. And then afterwards, you write down, okay, they liked this, but they didn't like that. Don't make this next year, and keep that sheet of paper.
All right, what about you, Jenny? Trying anything new?
I think we'll probably stick with most of the classics, but we'll see how this black sea bass dish goes. And then my little Lexi loves to be in the kitchen and cook, so I'm sure she's going to want to experiment and try some different recipes. So we'll probably a combination of both.
Always fun when you can have the little ones help with the menu too, right? Because then you're the one who wanted this, right? You have to eat it.
Yeah, right. Well, she loves it. She writes out the menu. For Thanksgiving, she did that. She wrote out all the dishes and she helped me from start to finish. It was amazing.
So that's nice.
Lots of kids do love being in the kitchen.
Yeah, a little sous chef, right?
Yes, exactly.
Jenny Ron's a registered dietitian with a master's in nutrition and public health. She's the author of Coastal Kitchen. PJ Hamill, a baker who's developed and written recipes, blogs, and cookbooks for the King Arthur Baking Company for over three decades. Thanks so much for being here and sharing your expertise.
Thank you, Mindy.
And hope you all have a happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.